I'll call the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 14th, and the time currently is 3:30. Please turn off all cell phones. Members present today, we have Vice Chair Klayman, Senator Merrick, Senator Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki, and we're expecting Senator Wilikowski to be here shortly. I want to thank Carrie Cooperrider from Senate Records for being here today, as well as Lisa Denny, the moderator for the Legislative Information Office. On today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 46, Brain Injury Awareness Month, sponsored by Senator Tobin. Senate Bill 21, Strategic Plans for State Agencies, sponsored by Senator Kaufman. Senate Bill 9, the Alaska Sunset Commission, sponsored by Senator Hughes. We will start first with Senate Bill 46, Brain Injury Awareness Month. This is the first hearing, and my intention is to hear the bill, take invited and public testimony, and hold the bill for future consideration. If Senator Tobin and Ms. Pope would like to come forward, welcome to the committee. And if you just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hello, my name is Lukey Gail Tobin, Senator to District I, representing the communities of Fairview, South Addition, Downtown Anchorage, Government Hill, Jay Bear, and parts of Northeast Muldoon, East Ridge, and North Star.
My name is Mackenzie Pope, and I'm staff to Senator Tobin.
All right, folks. We're very excited to bring with you today Senate Bill 46, which would proclaim March of every year as Brain Injury Awareness Month here in the state of Alaska. We have two folks who will be offering invited testimony, but before we do that, I'd like to offer a few facts for you. Millions of Americans live with brain injuries. It's estimated that every 9 seconds, someone in the United States suffers a traumatic brain injury. At least 2.8 million Americans have sustained a traumatic brain injury this year, and 47.9% of those result from falls. At least 5.3 million Americans live with long-term disabilities as a result of a brain injury, and about 64,000 people die every year due to a traumatic brain injury. That's about 176 people a day. According to the Alaska Department of Health, Alaska has one of the highest number of people experiencing traumatic brain injuries here in the nation. Over 10,000 Alaskans are living today with a traumatic brain injury, and an estimated 247 Alaskans become permanently disabled due to a traumatic brain injury every year. Nationally, the cost of medical care and lost wages associated with traumatic brain injuries is estimated at over $76 billion a year. Brain injuries are caused by strokes, substance use disorder, falls, motor vehicle accidents, assaults, and other trauma. Brain injuries are under-recognized public health problems, and they affect everyone, especially older adults and children. Brain injuries can result in many health and mental health issues, including short-term memory loss, headaches, fatigue, depression, mood swings, impulsive behavior, and horrifically, thoughts of suicide. And the hard part is that brain injuries can only be treated if they are identified. Some people with brain injuries can recover fully, while others suffer permanent disabilities or even death. The ability to recover depends on the degree of damage, the amount of support and resources, and the level of treatment. It's very different for every individual. The Department of Defense recognizes Brain Injury Awareness Month and has been doing a lot of research on how to prevent and address injuries. This is why we've introduced SB 46, which will permanently recognize March as Brain Injury Awareness Month here in the state of Alaska. We hope to bring recognition to the effect traumatic brain injuries have, and we hope that this recognition will cause more Alaskans to become diagnosed and also to seek treatment. So now, if the committee wills it, we will read through a sectional analysis and also go over a zero fiscal note.
Please continue. Are there any questions for Ms. Tobin at this time? Thank you, Senator Tobin. Ms. Pope.
Through the chair, my name is Mackenzie Pope, and I am staff to Senator Tobin, and I will go through the sectional analysis for Senate Bill 46. Section 1 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to add a new section recognizing the importance of brain injury awareness in the state of Alaska. Section 2 amends AS 44.12 by adding a new section to Article 2, establishing the month of March as Brain Injury Awareness Month in Alaska. This allows schools, community groups, and other public and private agencies and individuals to observe Brain Injury Awareness Month with appropriate activities that increase the public's awareness of the prevention and treatment of brain injuries.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Pope? Okay. Seeing none, we have a couple folks who are here invited testimony. And let's see, I'll go ahead and open testimony. We have first with us Anna Zirfus, the Vice Chair of the Brain Injury Council of Alaska, who's on Teams, I believe.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Welcome. If you'd just state your name and your affiliation for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Anna Zirfus, and I am the Acting Chair of the Brain Injury Council of Alaska.
And go ahead, and you have a couple minutes to speak on behalf of the bill.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm here today to testify in support of this bill, which would permanently make the month of March Brain Injury Awareness Month. This seems like a small, simple thing to do. However, in reality, it would lend stability to current outreach around the state about brain injury and further the message that this is an important topic in Alaska. When you look at the statistics surrounding brain injury in our state, they paint a pretty grim picture. Between 2016 and 2018, Alaska had the highest number of deaths from traumatic brain injuries, TBIs, in the nation. Alaska Native and American Indian populations in our state are hit the hardest, with a higher proportion of brain injuries from assault, ATV, and snow machine accidents, while we have the lowest rate of access to care. Overall, Alaska has one of the highest rates in the nation for any brain injury. This is in children whose learning can be permanently impacted, in teens who are injured in sports and never diagnosed so they don't get proper care, in adults who are affected by homelessness and domestic violence, in seniors who are misdiagnosed because of age-related disabilities. Every segment of our population is touched by brain injury, whether it is a survivor, caregiver, family, or friend. And once an injury happens, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to get another TBI or get addicted to alcohol or drugs. 87% of adults involved in the justice system have sustained a TBI. And more than 50% of people who experience homelessness experienced a TBI before they became homeless. And finally, survivors are 4 times more likely to die by suicide. On top of all those statistics, there's one I live with daily. 20 to 30% of people who sustain a mild to moderate brain injury, think concussions, will not fully recover. This means that 20 to 30% of the survivors will be impacted by daily symptoms of brain fog, headaches, chronic migraines, emotional instability, balance issues, light sensitivity, and the list goes on. This, of course, results in a loss of income, high medical bills, inability to be the parent they were before, and loss of support circles. 6 years ago, I was a pretty normal single mom, working 2 jobs with music and singing embedded in everything I did. I had a social circle of friends and family, was raising my beautiful son, and was looking forward to his senior year and college trips. On a sunny April morning, I took 1 step, and my life before ended. Like many people in Alaska, I slipped on black ice and went up in the air like a cartoon character and came down on the back of my head. The doctor said I had a moderate concussion, but I was so out of it, I had no idea what that meant for me, my son, or my life. For almost 2 years, I lived in a haze of pain and fog with severe light sensitivity and was shut up in my home with light blocking curtains while wearing the darkest sunglasses I could find. All of this while I was fighting with paperwork and disability that I was in no condition to be working on. I had to get rides to the doctor every 4 days for weeks to be monitored, and it was only through luck that my doctor at the urgent care center had experience in brain injuries from his time in Afghanistan and with our veteran population. I gave him carte blanche to experiment on me with medications, nutraceuticals, and therapies. After 3 years, it has been found in the research that any new improvement is rare. When I reached that point, I was on a raft of daily medications, and every morning when I woke up, I had to evaluate how much pain I was in and what accommodations I would need to use to mitigate symptoms and get through my day. Fast forward to late in year 5, when my doctor tried a new medication. In a weird twist he had never seen before, it masked my pain and haze, and while my cognitive and speech issues did not get better, it gave me more mental energy to get through the day. While I have a great job now that is completely different than what I used to do, I now have severe limitations. I will never be able to work in an office full-time again, to spend a day out on the lake playing in the sun, go on road trips, and the two things that were an integral part of my soul, time with my son and my singing, were taken from me. This bill, with your help, would bring awareness to this issue and to the other people in our state who are walking this road. It could be the first step in bringing more services to our state for survivors and their families. Thank you again for your time, and please let me know if you have any questions or if the council can assist in any way.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Surface. Are there any questions for Ms. Surface? It's good to see you again, and I just wanted to remind you it's 30-year reunion is this summer, if you can believe that.
I know.
All right, thanks so much. Next, we have another person on invited testimony. We have Annette Alfonsi, a community activist on brain injury issues, and she's joining us by phone.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can, Ms. Alfonsi, if you just state your name and affiliation for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much. Hi, my name is Annette Alfonsi, and I'm here on behalf of Unmasking Brain Injury and also independently. Thank you for letting me speak with you today. Before 2012, I worked for the 1%, had a college degree, and was looking at grad school. After I was a passenger in a rollover car accident with a reckless driver, my primary provider only gave me one day off of work to rest, but I had internal injuries and persistent concussion symptoms. Some doctors said I should get back to work, others said I would never work again, and 2 said I should be a housewife. None of them did comprehensive blood tests before offering me medication contraindicated for brain injury recovery. I was laid off 1 business day before I would have qualified for medical leave, denied Social Security disability, and told at both the municipal and state level that I am not in a category that people care to help. I have greater risk from comorbid health conditions that providers don't know to screen for, and I am likely to die a premature, preventable death. It doesn't have to be this way. Leaving Alaska was less expensive and more effective than what I experienced here. So since 2015, I've planned annual educational events with different host organizations and credits in up to 9 different professional fields per event. I've been told I cannot attend educational events that I helped plan because I am a patient. This contributes to a don't ask, don't tell mentality of disability within the state. So I plan events with people that want multidisciplinary standards of excellence around neurological wellness in Alaska, and all are invited. This year, I released my new website, empoweringeducation.us, and there are on-demand credits approved for attorneys and occupational therapists, and we're only growing from here, and everyone's invited to join us. A few years ago, Alaska was not in national or international conversations about brain injury. So in 2017, I became the volunteer Alaska partner for Unmasking Brain Injury, an international project where people with any kind of traumatic or acquired brain injury and their loved ones make a mask with an explanation of their art to share what it feels like to live with a brain injury. We work with groups to host mask making and mask exhibits. Now Alaska's stories and art are viewable on an international level at the website unmaskingbraininjury.org, and Alaskans know we are not alone. In 1 book, To Become a Certified Brain Injury Specialist, there are references to alcohol misuse, domestic violence, and mental health. But those groups don't regularly screen for brain injury, so it feels very one-sided and not fiscally efficient. In one case, someone in a program kept giving away a phone, saying the phone hurt them. The model has a bright screen, so I asked if they ever had a vision assessment or a blue light screen blocker, and they didn't. This group had never adjusted the light settings on a cell phone and assumed that the phone hurt because talking to people was emotionally difficult, not that a vision dysfunction made phone use physically difficult without the right settings. Vision dysfunction is common after a brain injury. In one case, someone let their professional license lapse because they couldn't work the number of hours demanded of them, but they wanted to work a few hours a week within their ability, and it's a field that we need in Alaska. They were depressed that they retired early. Shorter work days are needed after brain injury. I brought the Buffalo Concussion Treadmill Test to an outpatient clinic, and my physical therapist taught everyone how to use it. It took me over 2 years to get the right test and treatment, and I still had symptoms after months, while a new patient was treated immediately and living their best life symptom-free within 6 months. Timely treatment matters with brain injury. Brain injury isn't the life sentence it was, and people can heal, but the amount of that healing and function is dependent on factors that are not being maximized in Alaska. In an all-or-nothing world, if you can't do it all, you're worth nothing. We need to get away from that and tangibly recognize there's a place for everyone in our community, even with brain injury symptoms. And in the 21st century, my hope is that long-term brain injury symptoms will be a thing of the past. Today, I'm glad we're in a category people care to discuss. Someday, I hope we're in a category people care to help. But it starts with awareness. Please pass this bill to raise that awareness. And thank you all very much for your time.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Alfonsi. Are there any questions for the invited testimony from Ms. Alfonsi? Okay. Hearing none, I'd like to thank both Ms. Zierfus and Ms. Alfonsi for invited testimony. And we will now open it up to public testimony on Senate Bill 46. Public testimony is limited to 2 minutes, so if you could put yourself on the record by stating your name, your affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony. And first up, it looks like we have Marie Wilson online.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Marie. Can you just state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, my name is Marie Wilson, and I'm affiliated with Access Alaska in Wasilla, Alaska. I've been with them for almost 9 years. I was in a car wreck in 2014, on March 28th. I was hit from behind by a drunk driver. He was going 90 miles an hour, and I was going 40. By the grace of God, it didn't kill me because my dog saved my life by scratching, and I looked in my mirrors to see this person coming, so I was able to hold myself back. And I've been dealing with this for 9 years now, and it's difficult at times, but I've been getting a lot of good help from Access Alaska. They've taught me how to be my own advocate, and I have problems with my mail and my paperwork and stuff, and they helped me wonderfully with it. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to keep it all together. And I'm just grateful for this opportunity to get to speak about traumatic brain injury and it becoming a yearly thing, a monthly awareness of TBIs, because the support and help that I received from my family and friends was nothing. And so that's really hard and hurtful, but I'm grateful that there are people out there like you guys that are doing something about it. And these women that I heard their testimony is just awesome, because you've really been through a whole lot. I'm very proud of you from what you've done. I thank you for this opportunity, and have a good day, everybody.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Wilson, for your testimony this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Lisa Maloney from Anchorage. If you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Lisa Maloney. I live in Anchorage, and I am not affiliated with any organization. I'm just an everyday Alaskan. I hope you'll bear with me, though, because I got really emotional, much more emotional than I expected, listening to the testimonies that have gone before me. I've heard others say that making March Brain Injury Awareness Month could be the start of increased services, and I am here to testify in support of the bill. Not looking at that, but looking at the very simple benefits and immediate benefits that can come from increased awareness. I have not been directly affected by brain injuries myself, but as I listened to the introduction from Senator Tobin, I had planned to speak to you about one close family member that has been affected, and I realized I'm surrounded by people that are affected by traumatic brain injuries. And that is something that I just learned today, because I was not aware of how many conditions are actually included in that umbrella. So that itself is one benefit that could come from increased awareness. My close family member I wanted to tell you about, though, their life has been affected by a traumatic brain injury, and they will probably never be the same. I don't want to say who it is out of respect to their privacy, but they fell and they hit their head against the side of their home, and they did not get timely treatment because they did not understand the severity of what may have just happened to them. It's only because I happened to call them a couple weeks later, you know, so way further down the line than it should have been, and say, hey, how are you doing? And then they mentioned that this had happened, and gosh, they were still having double vision, and they couldn't concentrate, and their head hurt. And it's only by sheer chance that I happen to be personally acquainted with a passionate advocate for brain injury awareness. And because of that, I was able to get my family member to go to the hospital and to get treatment. And they have gotten treatment. They would have gotten treatment faster if there had been increased awareness. And while there's no guarantee that that would have removed all the symptoms they are experiencing now and will probably experience for the rest of their life, it would have increased their chance of a more complete recovery and a faster recovery. And all of that, that simple benefit, could have just come from increased awareness in the public, because they might have known for themselves to seek treatment faster, or someone else around them might have known. So I am asking you to please support and vote yes in favor of SB 46, because it could save somebody's life or somebody's quality of life just through simple awareness. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Maloney, for your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll move on to Pamela Samish. Pamela, if you'd state your name and affiliation for the record, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Pamela Samish. I live in Nenana, and I am speaking on behalf of myself. I agree with these amazing testimonies, and I would like to promote and support SB 46 as well. I wanted to mention, I thought that this included Alzheimer's, but I guess I'm not sure it does now, though a traumatic brain injury, I have researched, can lead to Alzheimer's. But I would like to mention that I was part of a town hall meeting yesterday, and one of the issues that came up were children with traumatic brain injuries and how the schools are handling it. And they're having, depending on the severity, there's issues with how the children are, you know, it's overwhelming the staff sometimes. And I have a special needs granddaughter, so I get it, but she's in a different state. And I just hope that this will help, this awareness will help to help the special needs children and find good, productive ways that they can participate in school and be happy and feel safe and have the quality of care from the people that like to work with special needs kids happily, you know, and do it out of love for them. So I just hope this awareness helps them, you know, and it's just something to keep on the radar is the special needs kids in the school system. But I think it's a great tool. So please vote yes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Samish. I wanted to thank also Ms. Maloney, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Alfonsi, and Ms. Sierfus for also being online. Does the sponsor of the bill have any closing statements before we set the bill aside?
I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This is Lukey Tobin, Senator to Senate District I. I would like to just go over the fiscal note really quick, which is going to be presented by my aide here, Mike Mason.
Mike Mason, staff to Senator Lukey Tobin. Very simply, this is a zero fiscal note. The bill establishes March as Brain Injury Awareness Month. The administration does not anticipate any programmatic effects to departments as a result of the legislation. Therefore, a zero fiscal note for all agencies has been submitted. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mason. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Kawasaki. I just wanted to thank Senator Tobin for bringing this forward. I'm proud to be a co-sponsor. I have children that play both hockey and football, and I know what an important issue this is. I just had two little questions. Is there a reason you chose March, and are there other awareness months, you know, issues that happen in March as well?
Yes, thank you very much for the question. Lukey Tobin, Senator for Senate District I. The Department of Defense does recognize March as Brain Injury Awareness Month, so this is us ensuring that there's that co-branding so that awareness can be for both here in the state of Alaska and then also with our partners on military bases. Additionally, March does have some other excellent days recognized within it, birthdays, I hear, as well as the recognition of Women's History Month. And so it is a month that does have the opportunity to celebrate not only Iditarod and also suicide awareness, but also hopefully Brain Injury Awareness Month as well.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Merrick. Mr. Mason.
Just real quick, Mike Mason, through the chair, staff to Senator Tobin. Some of you might remember for the past few years that we have passed yearly resolutions proclaiming March as Brain Injury Awareness Month. The thought was that this is such an important issue that it kind of deserves a permanent recognition, and that is why this bill was brought forward. We actually, Senator or Representative Tuck brought it forward last year, and we kind of ran out of time, so that's why it has been brought forward this year.
Great. Thank you for the history, Mr. Mason. Are there any other questions for the sponsor or the sponsors designated this time? Okay. With that, I'm not sure if I closed public testimony on Senate Bill 46, but I'll do that now. And we will hold Senate Bill 46 over. If there are amendments to Senate Bill 46, I'd like those by close of business on the 21st. That's next Tuesday, the 21st. And we'll take a brief at ease to switch presenters for the next hearing. Okay, I'll call the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee back to order. Next, we have Senate Bill 21, Strategic Plans for State Agencies. This is the first hearing, and it's the intent to hear invited public testimony and hold the bill for future consideration. We'll start with some invited testimony. First, with Neil Steininger. Great to have you here. He's the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, here to provide an overview of our current system for departments. Welcome to committee. So, for the record.
Thank you. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. And I've been asked to provide a brief overview of the current budget process, as well as the deliverables that we include with the budget as backup documentation explaining, you know, what the agencies are doing with the money that's appropriated by this body. So, briefly, the budget cycle the main portion of the budget cycle that's really exposed to the public, to the, you know, the viewers at home in this hearing, really is the legislative process. That's the main portion of the public budget process that really starts on December 15th when the governor releases his budget publicly, and then when the legislature convenes in January and completes about 90 days later, per statute at least, when the legislature passes the budget and hands it off to the governor. But the actual budget process with agents, state agencies, the Office of Management and Budget, and the governor's office really is a year-round process. So we begin working on the next fiscal year's budget effectively the day that we get handed that budget from the legislature out of the conference committee report. So we start that process with what we call the authorized budget process. That's where we work with the state agencies to review the appropriations made, changes made from the governor's budget, make plans for how we'll be executing those appropriations, and also review and make recommendations to the governor for any veto actions that might be necessary, whether they're a matter of policy or, you know, some budget item that maybe no longer fits within an agency's operational plan. Then over the course of the summer, we work with the agencies to, you know, understand any realignments in the budget that are within our statutory authority to make internally at the Office of Management and Budget, you know, distributing across different line items. And we produce what we call internally the management plan. That for the Office of Management and Budget is really the starting point for building that next year's budget. Often in the, you know, legislative process, it's fairly analogous to what Ledge Finance refers to as the adjusted base budget. So you've probably heard that term used quite a bit. So we go from that point at that stage. That's usually roughly in the July timeframe of the calendar year. So that's being produced at the same time period as those agencies are closing out their prior fiscal year's budget. So that's actually a fairly busy time frame within state agencies. So towards the end of that month of July, we'll issue a memo out to agencies with guidance from the governor on what his expectations are for that next year's budget. So internally, the agencies have already been thinking about what their needs are, about what adjustments they want to make from what happened in subcommittees and the full committees and the conference committee. You know, they've been thinking about that internally, strategizing with their commissioner on the commissioner's direction that they want to take their agency. But then come July is really when the governor, you know, formally weighs in through that memo to give kind of direction on budget development to the agencies. Moving forward from there, the agencies put together their budget, their proposed budgets that they then present to the Office of Management and Budget in the September and October timeframe. So that provides them about a month and a half to sort of, you know, synthesize the governor's direction with kind of their internal needs or wants and put together a budget proposal that kind of tries to achieve all of those different policy objectives that come from both commissioners and the governor and discussions at a cabinet level. On the back end of all of this, however, is a lot of technical work being done by staff in the agencies. So the staff in the agencies are putting together all of the other backup documentation that may or may not bear in on a major policy item that might be introduced in the budget, but just simply is additional information on the core mission and the core deliverables of the department. The ultimate end product of that is what we refer to as the budget books. You can see them up in the finance rooms and binders that sit behind all the members of finance, particularly in House Finance, are on camera all the time. All those black binders are those documents, the documentation that the agencies produce. Previously, the Department of Health and Social Services, before it split, their binders, I think, took 3 4-inch binders, a couple thousand pages of documentation that's getting produced over the summer. That documentation is really laid out in the statutes that SB 21 is seeking to amend, and it lays out what types of information and what deliverables the legislature over time has requested from agencies to help ensure that your deliberations here are informed by good information about what we're doing in the executive branch when you might not be able to, you know, see all of our day-to-day operations. Primarily, when you look at the budget books as they're written now, they're really mostly covering what we're doing, the statutory basis for why we're doing it, you know, so referencing the statute that a given budget component is trying to address and achieve. It covers what we call our key component challenges, which oftentimes are, you know, this year you'll see a lot referring to a challenge in recruitment or things like that. It's what's getting in the way. What's getting in the way of us being able to deliver on that statutory objective, or things that we see in the future that might provide challenges to a state agency. And then there's also a section that allows for an agency to kind of brag about their key accomplishments as well. So it's not all just pessimistic and negative. There's sections in there talking about what have we achieved in the last year? What have we done with the money that we were appropriated? And then there's many, many reports on the detail behind how we're spending money, the positions in a component, the line item detail of actual expenditures that we've made in prior years, as well as those that we're planning, and then detailed descriptions of the year-over-year changes in the budget being proposed by the governor. There's also another piece included in those binders that oftentimes can be probably one of the areas where the value of the information is very inconsistent, I would say. And that's the performance measures included. So every state agency is supposed to provide performance measures that give objective statistics on how well they're delivering on the missions that they're entrusted with through statute. Some of those measures are very useful to look at, and some are, frankly, not. It's fairly inconsistent. It really is the amount of effort put into those performance measures really defines how useful they are to the budgeting process. And that's not to say that people are intentionally trying to provide bad measures. It's simply there are some statutory objectives that don't lend themselves as well to the types of performance measures that the current statutory construction really guides the agency to provide. So you can see that in some agencies where you might have a performance measure that simply is, you know, recording the number of applicants to a state program. Well, that doesn't really tell you much about how well the agency is actually delivering on that service. Others go a step further and provide data on the actual timeliness of application processing or things of that nature. So there's a pretty wide delta between those measures and how effective they are. A lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of those measures were set, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and, you know, maybe it was an issue at the time, you know, whether it was, you know, applicants actually applying for a program. Maybe an issue in the past was that there's pretty low public understanding of the program that existed, so they're seeing low engagement, and so maybe that was a meaningful statistic 15 years ago, but it just simply isn't today. So we do internally challenge state agencies to review those, review the information in those budget books on an annual basis and try to improve those performance measures. However, just frequently, they are not necessarily the highest priority of something to address during that time period, as we're trying to work on all the other budget deliverables that we may have for agencies. However, at the end of the day, that documentation really is the primary documentation for the public to understand what we're doing with state finances, what we're doing with the money we're appropriated, and why we're asking for what we're asking for. And so it is fairly important for us to provide good information to have a better public process.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Steininger. Other questions of the OMB director? Senator Clayman.
And specific to the performance measures or performance metrics that you have today, are those all written into statute, or are they established by regulations, or does the department essentially just come up with what they think are reasonable performance metrics or measures or metrics. I'm not sure whether you better call them measures or metrics. But.
Through the chair, Senator Klayman. So it's Senate statute that will have some system to measure performance. The actual system itself is a web portal that the Office of Management and Budget maintains. The measures themselves, though, are set by the agencies. So a given agency decides what measure they want to put forward. So you do occasionally see some, you know, desire to set a measure that you're going to be able to show well in, you know, something that you're going to be able to achieve or show, you know, put a good face forward. Sometimes you'll see some agencies really lean in to providing measures that are value add in terms of making sure they're providing something that, you know, maybe doesn't show that they're meeting their goal, but can show the progress over time. What I've seen in my time at Office of Management and Budget, this will be my eighth session with the office, is it really is very dependent on the culture of the given department. Of, you know, I've seen commissioners in some departments really have a focus on that kind of missions and measures, on setting good statistics to show that they are achieving their goals. And when you see that, when you see at the top level in a department somebody that's, you know, really got that organizational mindset, then you start to see that flow through these documents and you see better performance measures. But when you have somebody who's focused maybe on some other aspect of managing an agency, you can see that start to kind of fall off.
Senator Klayman?
So in terms of the measures that are done by the department, are those then put into regulations so we can actually see what they are, or are they just internal documents and the agency director could change the metrics at any given time?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, you can see the ones that are there in the OMB performance measures on, there's, I believe the website should be publicly accessible, as well as in the budget books themselves. However, those, once they're loaded in there, in the following year, an agency could choose to stop reporting on that measure itself.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Great. Are there further questions for Mr. Steininger? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony today. Next, we'll go ahead and hear from the sponsor. Senator James Coplin will introduce the bill. We also have Matthew Harvey, staff to Senator Kaufman, who will present sectional analysis and provide a presentation for us this afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, Senator James Kaufman, Senate District F, and I would like to thank the chair and the committee for hearing this bill today. Matthew, would you care to go ahead and put yourself on the record?
For the record, Matthew Harvey, staff to Senator Kaufman.
Thank you. Now that's done, so I'll say my simple goal today is to make performance management in budgeting and strategic plans exciting. So let's see how I do today. So I'll give a very brief summary of the sponsor statement just to kind of save some time today. Essentially, the premise is that we can do a much better job of aligning having strategic operating plans and aligning them with performance management measures to drive more value out of the money that we spend. If you look at any high-performing organization around the world that has a good management process, they've developed an operating management system, or OMS, that helps drive performance. So we've reference reviewed those various systems, some government, some private sector, and we've looked at how we can adapt them to the state of Alaska. And so SB 21 revises the Executive Budget Act, or sometimes we refer to it as the EBA for short, to better optimize Alaska's planning, budgeting, and performance management system. Under the new system, every annual budgeting cycle will occur within the framework of a four-year strategic plan, biannual strategic plan update, and an annual performance management / financial plan. This is to link the financial event of budgeting with performance management. The agencies will be required to set goals, objectives, and key performance metrics that meet legislative intent that is confirmed in every budget cycle. The legislature will then fund budgets that are aligned with strategic operating and performance management plans. To be clear, this is not the solution to all of our problems, but it's an essential framework that once we get this improved framework in place, we can more effectively do other improvement processes. In the world of operating management systems, or OMS, the quality management system is adjacent to it. So the OMS is how you operate, and the quality management system is how you improve. And so this is step one of building that framework that's more aligned with the way other great organizations manage themselves. So with that, if we could, instead of the sectional, I would like to just quickly just roll through the high level of some slides of the presentation, at least.
That's great. Thank you. Are there any questions for the sponsor of the bill at this point? Okay, hearing none. Mr. Harvey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, Matthew Harvey, staff to Senator Kaufman. And this is the presentation for SB 21, short title, Strategic Plans for State Agencies. A quick overview of the presentation, review the problem statement, the current state of Alaska Statute 37.07, which is the Executive Budget Act. Most of this bill approaches proposed future state that SB 21 affects some of the structural changes that are made to the EBA, the revised plan content summaries, and how we approach boards and commissions slightly differently in this proposal rather than the current state. Some of the benefits of the proposed state, and then some examples of other states and the federal government and how they use some of these tools. So as noted in the sponsor statement, the problem statement is really that Alaska's management of programs and projects has not been as strong as really it could be. Consistently scores lower than other states in many key metrics, and depending on how you measure those metrics versus spending. An example is C-minus report card for infrastructure by ASCE, and number 45 overall in U.S. News is best states, which measures a number of different metrics such as education, infrastructure, and other metrics. We have fragments of an appropriate enterprise scale management system, as Director Steininger was mentioning, but not something that really cohesively blends operational performance and quality management, enabling improvements to the system. So how can we start to drive a higher level of performance while improving our overall cost-benefit ratio? And ideally, that can be done with a proposal such as SB 21. So our current Executive Budget Act sits within Title 37, titled Public Finance, and the chapter is 07, the Executive Budget Act. The statement of policy of the Executive Budget Act is to establish a comprehensive system for program and financial management, which furthers the capacity of the governor and the legislature to plan and finance the services that they determine the state will provide for its citizens. And this clarifies the role between the governor in executing and the legislature in appropriating. So it describes the role of the legislature, OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, and the governor in the budgeting and program execution process, kind of linking those two powers of the two branches. It includes two sections which deal mainly with the planning and performance. It's 37.07050, currently agency program and financial plans and mission statements, and then 37.07.080, which deals with program execution. In the proposed future state in Senate Bill 21, we're changing some responsibilities. A major key is measures and targets being set by the executive branch, by those closest to the work and how the work product's delivered. Planning hierarchy and increased organization of the plans, having the governor set statewide priorities, 3 to 6 long-term priorities set by the governor, high level, which guide strategic plans being, as currently drafted, 4-year plans, updated at least every 2 years. And these would include mission, goals, and objectives for each agency. Performance plans, which would be annually revised and submitted, which list program structure, proposed changes to program structure, and performance history and future targets. And then financial plans being the annual plan, where a lot of the financial information sits, and financial history and budget information. Another key is the transparency and reporting requirements, where you have quarterly performance reports, which would report progress towards the targets listed in the performance plans, and all the plans and reports posted on a single public website. Here's a graphic which kind of graphically illustrates the hierarchy of the plans. Plan location, listing whether it's the governor's recommendation in the budget proposal, in strategic plans and performance and financial plans as the bottom two blocks. And then the planning cadence, be it long-term, or four-year, and annual as we move down the hierarchy. A few structural changes to the Executive Budget Act title and chapter. A title change of Alaska Statute 37.07.016, the governor's use of strategic plans, mission statements, and performance plans. So adding strategic plans and performance plans to reinforce the hierarchy and the new plan structures. A title change of Alaska Statute 37.07.050, which adds the reference to strategic plans, refocuses this section on strategic plans and changes the title because we're moving some of the performance and financial information to a newly created AS 37.07.085, lower on the slide here. There's also a new section, .055, within the Executive Budget Act, and that's specific requirements for boards and commissions because currently boards and commissions is listed in the same section as agencies, so they're subject to a lot of the same requirements. They don't necessarily operate in the same way as an agency as a whole should. And so we split those out to where they won't have to do the four-year strategic plans, and a lot of their information will be included in what we just call an operating plan. A brief overview of the agency strategic plans. As mentioned before, there'd be four-year strategic plans submitted at the beginning of each gubernatorial term to align with the governor's statewide priorities. Updated at least once every 2 years, so you can revise them before the 4 years is up and have a chance to look at progress and revise direction instead of totally change direction. And these would include a description of the plan and the mission statement that the plan is trying to achieve, 3 to 6 goals for the agency, specific, measurable, realistic, and timely objectives, methods of gathering user group opinions, stakeholder engagement, population served by the agency, and population trends, key external factors that could affect progress towards the strategic plan, and any required or requested legislation and regulatory changes that would be needed in order to have a success in meeting the strategic plan goals. And agency performance plans, which would be in that new Alaska statute section in the Executive Budget Act 085, subsection B. This would be an annual plan submitted to the legislature by December 15th, which is the current date for the governor's budget submission. This would include a description of the agency's program structure and proposed changes to the program structure, an identification of each program's constitutional or statutory authority, a program purpose statement, which would describe the services provided, customers served, and benefit or intended outcome of the program, ideally in a single or one or two sentence statement. Identify performance measures which would align with the strategic plan and contribute to progress towards the strategic plan, and as well as the goals and objectives that the measures correspond to create that link. And identify results for each performance measure over the past 4 years if it has been a performance measure which has history to report on. And identify performance targets for each measure for the next fiscal year to show which direction that we would like to go with those performance measures. And agency financial plans, as the last plan here, is in subsection C of that new .085 within the Executive Budget Act. And this would also be submitted to the legislature December 15th of each year, including more financial information, revenue expenditures for each program for the prior 4 fiscal years, breakdowns of the amount received by each revenue source and expended in each type of expenditure, estimates of revenue and expenditures for current and next fiscal year, budget requested, number of positions, cost of services provided by each program, report of receipts, estimates for current and next year, and other information as needed in order to complete that financial plan. And then the new boards and commissions section creates that section, as mentioned before, to ensure that the reporting and planning requirements for boards and commissions is commensurate with what boards and commissions need to do rather than an entire agency. And this would, every year they would provide a financial plan with the requested budget, expenditures that were made last year, currently authorized and proposed, an explanation of services and the operations of the board or commission, what they do, number of total positions employed or under contract by the board or commission, and a report of receipts made the prior fiscal year, the current fiscal year, and the next fiscal year forecasted. And then any identified legislative changes that would be requested. This would be an annual plan, and they would also provide a plan for the operation of programs. Boards and commissions shall develop a method of measuring results for themselves, and a closeout report would be required upon termination of the board, commission, and agency programs related to the board or commission. A high-level overview of some of the benefits, as has been mentioned. It would align the strategy of all agency with governor's statewide priorities, and this also contributes to standardizing the planning processes across agencies. Link short-term tactics and funding to mid-range department-level strategy. Push responsibility for defining, measuring targets to the executive branch, which is the people closest to the customers of the services and delivery of those services. Reduce duplication of goal-setting and financial information at a program or component level, which contributes to a lot of the thickness in those budget books, as Director Steininger mentioned. And increase the level of detail regarding program structure and program definition. And lastly, here's a few examples. The federal government has the Government Performance Results Act and subsequently the Modernization Act that updated a lot of those for the digital age as it came. And there's a lot of strategic planning, performance planning, and how that ties into budgets with that GPRAMA. Arizona strategic plan examples. North Carolina has solid strategic planning processes and some other ones listed on this slide. And then we just have a few examples that we can are here for reference, but we can kind of zoom through these pretty quickly if we'd like.
Great. Okay. Are there questions for the sponsor of the bill? Well, you've stunned us all. It was thrilling, thrilling work. Are you sure there's no questions at this point? Okay, good. Senator Willikowski.
But I'm maybe Neil for Ms. Steininger, about the support and the doability of this.
Again, for the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. So are you asking about, you know, or through the chair,
Senator Willikowski? I'm asking two things. I'm asking, number one, do you support the bill? Number two, I'm just curious your thoughts on the bill and whether it's feasible, whether it's something that you think is would help government, would help your job, would help us rein in government spending and plan out for our future a little better.
So through the chair, Senator Willikowski, we don't have an official position on the bill as the administration. To kind of some of my comments earlier about the nature of some of the existing things in our budget books. Some of them are certainly not as value add as they could be. There's certainly, you know, a lot of duplicated effort in some of the things that get drafted in those budget books. Some of the work put in by budget analysts and agencies that I don't see getting consumed by the legislature or public in the budget deliberation process, which to me indicates that maybe they're not as useful as the effort being put into them. So in terms of, you know, do I see this as a benefit to the state? I think taking a look at some of these things we've been doing for this long probably is beneficial in terms of just looking at, are we actually using what we currently have agencies producing in our deliberations over the budget? And I think that's a question that is kind of inherent in a bill proposal like this. Sometimes we've stopped producing a report at OMB and heard absolutely nothing from the public or the legislature. Other times, though, we've had something that we never had anyone ask questions about. We stop producing it and immediately get a lot of questions. So it's kind of hard to tell.
I think fundamentally what Senator Kaufman is trying to get at is a good goal. It's trying to be more efficient and trying to run our government a little bit more productively. Do do you have any suggestions on how we do that, or are we at optimal efficiency right now?
Through the chair, Senator Hulikowski, I don't think I could honestly say that we're at optimal efficiency, or that, you know, we'll ever be perfectly 100% efficient. But always looking at how we can do things better, how we can add more value to the process, and, you know, and ensuring that we have a mechanism to take that step back and ask the question of, you know, are we doing things well? You know, to that end, you know, not to make a pitch for a budget item in OMB's budget, but we did this year request an additional position for an internal auditor, which is more of a programmatic audit, which is trying to get to some of these same things. Are the agencies, you know, is the work being put in by the agencies, you know, really going towards effectuating the appropriations being made and the statutes that are out there, and trying to put some more effort into, you know, having some people that can take a step back and look at it outside of that annual context and not be tied to just on that sort of hamster wheel of producing next year's budget. And, you know, as far as this bill goes towards trying to implement that in statute, I think, you know, seems to be a step that could help that process.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Senator Klayman.
I early asked you, this is for Mr. Steininger, and then I'll probably have a question for Senator Kaufman. I asked you earlier about the current performance metrics that you use. Are they in statute and regulations? And the basic answer was no. And so in the same sense, is there anything in this bill that you couldn't do today in terms of coming up with your department performance metrics? I mean, does this bill change your ability to change your performance metrics? And if you wanted to come up with 15 different performance metrics and get rid of 10, then could you do that today with or without this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, so certainly departments today under, you know, current authority could improve their performance metrics. And we've seen agencies make efforts into that. You know, one example I'd like to use talking about this is the Department of Education that had Alaska's Education Challenge. And under that commissioner that spearheaded that, really pushed within his sectional lead, within the division directors, within the section leads, to tie what they did, everything that they did within their section, to components of that Alaska Education Challenge. So really looking at a top level, what are we here to do? What's our mission? How does what you do, you know, over here in the Division of Libraries work towards that mission? And so, you know, that was all within existing statutory structure, you know, and set performance measures there. But, you know, that was, like I had said earlier, you know, a commissioner that very much had that organizational mindset that wanted that to happen. And so made it happen. And so, you know, I understand this bill, this would kind of mandate that rather than it being something where we're relying on an individual commissioner with that organizational mindset to take it upon themselves and put that kind of effort in.
Well, Senator Klayman. But in that same sense, and this again for Mr. Steininger, even though this bill may mandate somewhat more than maybe getting done today, wouldn't it come down to how much the departments really wanted to do?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, certainly. You know, like anything, if you don't do a good job of it, you're not going to get good results out. this, though, you know, obviously would highlight that if, you know, an individual department kind of turned in a, you know, a program plan, a performance plan that wasn't very good, would be pretty clear. And through the budget subcommittee process, you know, and the policy committees of the legislature, you know, the legislature would have an opportunity to, you know, question that department on that plan. You know, not that you don't have that ability currently in the committee structure to question an agency on their plans and their, you know, what they're doing and how they're executing statute, but this would just highlight that.
And a question for Senator Kaufman?
Yeah, of course.
My query is, what is the, I mean, if you had a governor that really a governor say that had your values and wanted to invest in lots of performance metrics, if you had a governor that pushed that hard, is there anything today that would prevent a governor from doing that? And what does this bill add to the mix that isn't there today if you had a chief executive that really wanted to push stuff like this?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Klayman. What this is creating is a standardized framework. And so the reference to OMS, an operating management system, so governors change, commissioners change, legislators change, and currently we're going down a well-worn path, but not necessarily the best path. And so what we're trying to do with this piece of legislation is create an improved management framework that standardizes on, arguably, there are departments that are already doing a great job of creating a strategic operating plan, managing their performance towards key goals and objectives. It happens, and I'm always thrilled when I see it, but it's not consistent. And the nature of government, or indeed corporations, where the personnel roll out, but the ones that create a good management framework that people can come into and reliably fill the role, do the job, meet the key goals and objectives. So the key goals and objectives flow down, strategic management plans come back up, they're evaluated, and then the operating plans are set against that. And what you're creating is a conveyor belt for performance that we don't currently have, and it's standardized across the entire executive branch. So it's not that it doesn't exist now, it's that it doesn't exist as a unified and recognized performance management framework that we can operate to. If I could, I'd just say some of us that are old enough remember when Toyota was not highly regarded. It was a tertiary company that made little junk cars that people didn't really respect. As you move forward in time, the processes of having a well-founded, well-constructed operating management system that is continuously improved and enhanced by a quality management system is what has driven them to global prominence. So that opportunity is there for us by using these same management processes, standardizing on them. And within that standardization comes the promise and the capability of continuously and incrementally improving it. And that's across the entire executive branch. So that's the opportunity statement in this. The problem statement is, what do we do now? The bigger vision is the opportunity statement in being, just picture being recognized, Alaska being known as one of the best managed states in Alaska because of the frameworks that we put into place that allow elected officials to come in and work to a good management structure that we don't currently have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, we have a question from Senator Merrick.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Kaufman, thanks for bringing this forward. Do you see aligning the strategic plans with the gubernatorial terms, maybe creating some unnecessary political overtones as opposed to having it maybe off years?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Merrick. I see that as an area that, and I'll go ahead and highlight for the committee, the things that we really need to look at. We need to look at the cadence. So do we come into, speaking of, you know, as governor, so if I come into office, am I coming into an office that's already working under the established plan, and then I have my shot at mine? Or do I come in having to lay the groundwork for what's going to happen? And so there's timing implications there. There are things that the committee work on this will include looking at what agencies are driven by other requirements. So there's federal requirements that we have to meet. Maybe they have a 5-year. So as we go through this, there will have to be some cleanup work on aligning with that. So that's an important consideration. And if I can just go and take the opportunity, what we'll also have to look at is that there's some things that we'll have to thread through as far as separation of powers. And so that's where it gets really interesting. But these are discussions that we need to have of when you set key goals and objectives. Well, we have the Constitution tells us all what we need to do. The legislature has its role in setting, you know, we're setting what the department should be doing legislatively. But then we have to work out a way where the people managing the work can actually say, this is what's important, this is what we have to do, and have a framework for reporting that up more reliably than what we have now, and saying, this is how we're going to do it against these key performance objectives. And before, there was a conversation about like weak objectives, and I've seen in my career of managing these sorts of processes, I've seen people basically say, well, I'll show up for work today or every day, this, you know, that'll be great. I don't mean that literally, but they're basically so easy to achieve that they're not meaningful. So we have to, as an entity, as the state, has to get much better at performance management driven by identification of real goals and objectives that are salient to the very problems that we need to solve. But we can take that journey. Other organizations have done it and won. So thank you.
Thank you. Before we set the bill aside, I'm going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 21. I didn't see anybody online at this point. Nobody's online. We'll go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 21. And did you have any final comment? Brief comment.
Very brief. I'll just say thank you for hearing this, and I hope I did a little bit to make performance management exciting. I did my best. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I shall geek out a little later with you. Thank you, Senator Kaufman. We will set Senate Bill 21 aside and take a brief ease to switch presenters. We'll call the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee back to order. Before us, we have Senate Bill 9, the Alaska Sunset Commission. This is the first hearing. It's my intention to hear the bill, take invited and public testimony, and then hold the bill for future consideration. With us today, we have Senator Shelley Hughes to introduce Senate Bill 9, as well as staff Stephen Knauss, who will present the presentation that we have before us. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I'll first say I am honored to be before you. My name is Shelley Hughes, Senator for District M. SB 9, I have named it the Alaska Sunset Commission Act. It's very timely that it comes after Senator Kaufman's bill because it's really on the same topic, and it would be interesting actually for you all to consider perhaps somehow merging some of these ideas. Because right now, when you think about where we are fiscally as a state and with the situation and our history since statehood, we are at a point where there are conversations in the building about possible increasing taxes, implementing possibly new taxes, those kind of things, and the need to get our fiscal house in order. And so for the public, when you go to that kind of thing, especially if we got to the point where we would move to a broad-based tax, you would want to have something like this in place, and perhaps something like Senator Kaufman brought up. So what this bill would do, it would establish an effective oversight tool via regular assessment of state agencies. That sounds familiar. We were just talking about that. But it's on behalf of Alaskans in a different kind of way, and it's going to ensure that our public dollars are being put to good use. In other words, that we're getting the best bang for our buck. And the process will ensure that we have a more accountable, efficient government, and also that processes are better on behalf of the public, less burdensome for them, things moving more smoothly. So right now, when you think about, as legislators, how the process works here as far as the budget, and I won't repeat what was said, but we are tasked within 90, 120 days to figure out some multi-billion dollar departments and what is best as far as how dollars should be targeted and any adjustments in statutes to help those departments run more efficiently and effectively. That's a huge task. And even though we all are well-intentioned, we want to do that, we don't really have the time to gather all the information and get into the weeds and aren't really in a position truly to be able to do what would be best. And so what this bill does, it would create an independent objective entity called the Alaska Sunset Commission, and it would be charged with reviewing and via detailed and robust audits each department by division, every agency, on a rotating schedule over a 12-year period. And then the commission would make recommendations related to the performance and cost in a report. But here's the thing that's a little bit different than the previous bill. It would do it in a bill draft form, and that bill draft would be provided to the legislature. Now, here's the real kicker, and we're not the first state that's talking about. In fact, I have some gentlemen that are at the Texas Capitol right now. It's 7:30, 8 o'clock there. They're waiting to testify because Texas has had such a program in place since 1977, and other states have done it as well. The kicker is that when that bill comes to the legislature with a recommendation from the audit, we would need to take it up, or that division or agency would sunset, thus the name Alaska Sunset Commission. Now, sometimes there are reports, as we heard our OMB director say, that sometimes we don't even miss when they stop producing them. So these are reports. This would actually cause us to have to take it up. We would not let these reports sit on a shelf and collect dust, because if we would, that agency would be dissolved. It would be eliminated. So it is a way for all the work that is being done to actually come before us, and they have a whole year to prepare it and look into the weeds, interview staff, and do all those things to make sure we know if this department agency still needed, or are there improvements needed? Does it need to be enhanced? Do they have enough staff? Maybe they don't have enough staff and they need more staff. Maybe what they're doing is being duplicated somewhere else and it could be consolidated. All those kinds of things. So I am encouraging you to think about this, because it is a way, as the tax conversations are happening, we want to make sure that we're doing the best job that we have to really have optimal, I think I heard that word, optimal and effective government that serves the people appropriately, but is run very efficiently. And so this, and I want to say this is astounding, I believe, and our folks from the Texas Capitol can affirm this, but I believe I read that 80% of the recommendations that they do through these reports actually come to be through the legislature. They are accepted, they go through the process, and they're put in place. If you were to ask our wonderful legislative auditor, Chris Curtis, right now, of all the work that she does, a lot of things, you know, she's got some good recommendations, but we don't always put them into action. So I think in that way, we would actually, paired up with perhaps Senator Kaufman's bill, have what might truly become one of the best state governments in the nation. So with that, I think even rather than Mr. Chair, with your permission, maybe instead of going into the, well, actually we can go through them really fast because I want you to see the states really quick. So, and actually I'm going to do it instead of Stephen, he was going to do the sectional. But these are the states that have elected and appointed state auditors. Okay, so blue for elected, appointed, and red for elected. And the next slide, these are who appoints them. And so you can see we're gold. So our auditor is appointed by the legislature. And then next, as far as a sunset commission, like I just described to you, there are other states doing this. So we would be in good company. Next. And we kind of talked about this. I'm not going to read it all, but it is basically to improve each department by division, section, office, and then it goes in a bill draft form to the legislature. Next. And who's on the commission? It's made up of 9 people, and what we're doing is we're bringing people with private sector experience who understand budgets, they understand efficient operations, and they are the commissioners, and then they would employ auditors, CPAs, et cetera, to do the audits. Okay, next. And won't go through this either, but it's just a process through the year. There are dates set, and then the report comes. Eventually, a bill comes to the legislature, and we decide what we want to do with it. This is the cycle of the various departments, and you can see it's on 12 years. you notice at the very end, we are including the legislature in 2034, the university in 35, and the court system and judicial branch in 36. So we're not leaving anyone out. Here's where it's pretty interesting, and maybe the Texas folks will touch on this, but they've been operational. They've had over $1 billion in savings, and for every dollar spent by the commissioner, it's an $8 return for the state. And, oh, yeah, that's where I saw it. Over there in the right corner, 80% of their recommendations have become law. Next. This is what you get. You get a higher level of accountability performance. You dissolve entities that are redundant, ineffective, and inefficient. You have improved policy and procedures for public services, millions in savings. You can target revenue to ensure efficient, effective services, and you can encourage greater participation by the public. So that is the quick overview. I will say right up front, the bill itself, we wanted to get it out there. It would need some work to do. In fact, the very provision as far as the automatic sunset thing isn't yet fully vetted. But I also wanted to say that we have worked with Ledge Legal as far as resolving any kind of constitutional issues, anything like that. And one of the things that fits, the entity would fit under the executive branch, because you can't just have it floating out there in space. So you got to either put it under the legislature or the executive branch. But the idea is going to be like the Alaska Railroad or something, where the governor doesn't have oversight on it. The governor makes the appointment, the legislature confirms. And it's on a rotating schedule at 5 years, so it actually avoids the political thing that Senator Merrick brought up. So there you have it. And Mr. Chair, we have Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell online, and we also have Brian Francis, who's Executive Director of the Texas Sunset Commission, and his General Counsel and Deputy Director Stephen Ogle.
That's right. Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead right to invited testimony. We have a couple people who are currently on Teams. We have Brian Francis, the Executive Director for the Texas Sunset Commission. Thank you for being with us so late in the evening, your time. Welcome to the committee, and if you just state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name's Brian Francis. I'm the Acting Executive Director for the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission, and I'm neutral on the bill.
Did you have any statement you wanted to make?
I do. So, Mr. Chairman Kawasaki, thank you so much for having us here today. Our agency, the Texas Sunset Advisory Commission, it's a nonpartisan legislative agency, and I'd like to say that we have a heart and a focus for objective analysis to improve state government. With me today on the call on Teams is my Deputy Director and General Counsel, Stephen Ogle. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. Senator Hughes, thank you for reaching out to us. I've got to tell you that I get very passionate and excited about this subject. It is near and dear to my heart. The issue of accountability in public service means a lot. My dad was in the Air Force. I know what public service looks like. I know what sacrifice looks like. And any opportunity that I have to make a difference and improvement in the lives of Texans, in my case, I'm going to jump on that opportunity. So the Sunset Commission was created in 1977 as part of reforms alongside the Public Information Act, the Open Meetings Act, kind of to restore faith in government and by fostering transparency and accountability. The Sunset Commission evaluates state agencies, and they decide whether or not an agency should continue, and if it does continue, how can they improve its operations for the citizens? So how does the Sunset magic work? Well, it's magic because of the staff and the effort that he put in it. The sunset process comes in three phases. You have the evaluation phase, deliberation phase, and the action phase. In that evaluation phase, the staff is gathering a lot of input from the agency that's being reviewed. They're gathering input from the stakeholders, and they're gathering input from the public. And as they go through this, doing a deep dive, research, and this is that part that Senator Hughes was talking about. This is all happening before the session kicks in. So they do their deep dive and trying to gather as much information as possible. Through their efforts, they will generate what we call a staff report, and that's going to include their findings. Here's what was going well. Here are the things that need to be improved, and they'll also include recommendations. That staff report will go to the commission for their deliberation. They will again convene a meeting that will include stakeholders in the agency and the public, asking them their input and their position on this on that staff report. As the commission's evaluating this, they will make an up or down decision, approve or deny each recommendation. They can modify the recommendations, or they can create brand new ones based on the input that they're receiving from the public. Then it moves to the action phase, which we are in Texas right now. It's where you'll have sunset bills that are generated for the legislature to consider. And so it'll go through the normal legislative process, you know, having committee hearings, bringing the public in, and then taking, you know, going through the committee process, being on the floor, and ultimately, we always hope passing because the staff has put a lot of work into it. That's the magic. Those deliberations for the staff and for the commission, they generate two type of recommendations. The recommendations are either statutory changes or management actions. The management actions are those that can be done within the existing authority that each agency has. Now, typically in Texas, each agency is going to go through sunset every 12 years, even though the legislature can adjust that frequency, and sometimes they do. Similar to the provisions that are in Senate Bill 9, the evaluation is based on the criteria that's included in the statute. It's going to look at, you know, is the agency achieving its statutory objective? Are they operating efficiently, cost effectively? And most importantly, in my opinion, are they encouraging public participation? Without a doubt, the sunset process has streamlined and changed the face of Texas government for the better. Sunset, since its inception, there have been 94 agencies that have been abolished, 42 of those abolished completely, another 52 of those were abolished and had their duties and responsibilities transferred to an existing agency or a newly created agency. When Sunset does this, and you kind of touched on this, Senator Hughes, there's cost savings that are generated from this. You know, since 85, we've had $1 billion in state and federal cost savings and revenue gains. So that's like for every $1 they put in to my agency, it returned $18 to the citizens and to the state. And that's real value. Now, you'll find that with the word sunset, a lot of the focus seems to be on abolishment. Oh, we're going to abolish this and we're going to abolish that. That happens. But what you see more often than not is that agency continues with improvements, being able to identify that this agency for years has not updated certain practices. We get those updated. This agency hasn't followed best practices for licensing and regulatory agencies. We infuse that into the agency's culture, allowing them to improve in how they provide services. Now, it is possible, and we did it this session, that our commission will make recommendations that go into the appropriation process, making recommendations like for the Texas Juvenile Justice Department or the Public Utility Commission this year to expand and increase the number of facilities that are available for our juveniles, or to address the chronic shortage in staff, or to improve the ability of our grid responding to cold weather. Okay, so as y'all know, in Texas, we don't do well in cold weather. We're not Alaska and be able to handle that. So we need some help, and that's an area that the Sunset Commission looked at very seriously, and they've made some changes that are going to allow Texas to really thrive when those conditions turn bad here. Now, cost savings is a big issue for the agency and the state, and improving operations, though, is a byproduct. How do we improve that state agency's operations? I've got to tell you that I'm new in this role. I'm literally a month and about 5 days as the acting executive director for this agency. But I've had a love and a passion for Sunset and its mission of accountability. Just a year and a half ago, I was, as I called at the time, a victim, but really a beneficiary of the Sunset process. I was the executive director for the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation, the largest occupational licensing agency in the state of Texas. We have about 1 million licensees, 40 programs, got a real big operation. I didn't think that Sunset was going to find a lot of stuff to improve. They did. They made our agency better. Just the process, you know, it's kind of like when your mother-in-law is getting ready to come over and visit you. You start cleaning up a little extra, you know, you want to make sure that things are just pristine. Agencies do that. They start positioning themselves for a Sunset review, but they also have an opportunity to really have an extensive conversation with people that have seen 100, 150 different agencies. And so they're able to share best practices and allow agencies to improve. My agency improved by, addressing risk-based inspections. We didn't have that in place, eliminating some unneeded programs that we were regulating. Those programs didn't need to be regulated. There was no loss of consumer protection. So those were taken off our watch and allowed us to be a lot more efficient as we move forward. Lastly, I want to talk about something that Senator Hughes just mentioned briefly. One of the key elements in this process for Sunset is having that sunset or abolishment date included in the agencies that you're reviewing in their enabling statute. That date creates the level of urgency. It creates we've got to get something done, not only through the review process, but it also encourages our legislature to say we've got to make some choices to either approve the agency, to approve the changes, or it's going to be abolished. And that sense of urgency, it drives the process, and it drives what I think is the heart of efficiency that a lot of agencies experience going through this. Those are my comments. I want to thank Senator Hughes and her staff. They've been so kind in reaching out to us and making sure that we'd have this opportunity. I do want to give my deputy an opportunity to make a few comments, and then we'll be available for questions.
Super. Thank you. We have Stephen Ogle, the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Texas Sunset Commission. If you'd just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, my name is Stephen Ogle. I'm the Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Sunset Advisory Commission of Texas, and I am neutral on the bill. Brian, you need to meet.
Okay. Did you have any further testimony you'd like to give today?
No, I'm really here more as a resource. I've been with the Sunset Commission for 16 years. I've reviewed just about every facet of state government. Really here to offer any assistance I can to the committee. But to echo Brian's comments, Texas only meets for 140, the Texas legislature only meets for 140 days every 2 years. So our legislature has to get through thousands of bills and a huge state budget and have a very limited time to do so. The sunset process allows a group of agencies to go through a thorough examination. And when those bills come before the legislature, they know that that agency has been scrubbed top to bottom. And that when they're making budgetary decisions and they're trying to change that agency statute, that they've had a year and a half of thorough examination before that bill comes up. This ongoing scrubbing process beyond the, as Brian said, the abolishment piece, allows for the agency to constantly improve. Every 12 years, there's a new iteration of that agency that's going to come out of the process, and it's going to be better, more efficient, and the people of Texas are going to get better service as a result. The only way it can work when you have a part-time legislature is to have a dedicated agency and dedicated staff working on it. And that's one of the things that really drives the sunset process is that independent staff serving for the legislature, going out in the field, doing that work. Other than that, happy to answer any questions.
Terrific. Thank you, Mr. Ogle. Are there any questions for Mr. Ogle or Mr. Francis at this time? Okay, thank you very much. We have one more person for invited testimony, and that is Lieutenant Governor B. Treadwell. Thank you for being online, sir. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and greetings to the people who just testified from Texas and to those who talked about this bill and the previous bill. Mr. Chairman, I am as you know, somebody who's worked for a long time on having appropriate but limited government in Alaska. I am currently president of Alaskans for Tax Reform, which essentially is a local branch of Americans for Tax Reform, where we've worked with people on both sides of the aisle. Senator Wilkowski helped us get the state checkbook back online last year as a way to have more transparency. I also work with the Alaska Policy Forum as a board member, as a member of the State Policy Network. These organizations have not taken a position on this legislation as yet, but we believe it's very, very important the legislature consider measures like this and the one that Senator Kaufman spoke about before this. You know, say an unexamined life is not worth living. You could say the need for government is perpetual, but the need for every government program is not. You could recognize that technology changes, times change, the competition changes. I remember serving in Governor Hickel's cabinet with a cabinet member who had served in government before, but not running an agency. And he said to us on a cabinet meeting, he said he was amazed the bureaus in his department are artifacts of unresolved crises of the past. I remember watching my first sunset exercise in the Alaska legislature when I was a reporter, and Alaska went through transportation deregulation. We used to have a commission that told you whether or not you could have a truck service. We regulated helicopters. We regulated airlines. We got out of that business, and it was through a transportation, I'm sorry, it was through a sunset style audit that you have here, and the legislature dealt with it. I think what's different about this legislation is that it sets things on a regular schedule. It delivers legislation here so that the audits are essentially looked at. You have the same choice that you always do as legislators to say yes or no, and that's very positive. But it becomes something that perhaps a little bit more publicly than the current process of auditing and sunset has been, where there would be public hearings by the commission on the audit. And frankly, as you know, our state has very few constitutional officers. I was one of two of them. We don't have a state auditor. We don't have a state treasurer. We don't have an elected attorney general. And I think in this case, by having a commission, we can help you ahead of time go through the issues that are likely to come up in the sunset and do that. So my recommendation to you today is just that you give this bill very serious consideration, as I know you will with this and with Senator Kaufman's bill on strategic planning. And thank you for hearing me today.
Great. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Are there any questions for Lieutenant Governor? Again, thank you to the three invited testimony folks. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony. There is one person that remains online. We have Pamela Samish on OffNet calling in from Indiana. If you just state your name and affiliation for the record, welcome back.
Hi, thank you again. this is Pam Samish again, and I'm talking on behalf of myself. I would like to ask for your support for SB 9, and what I personally like about it is my perspective is inflation. So I think anything that saves money for the state and saves money for the people is a good thing because, I mean, I have people in my neighborhood and at my husband's job asking for my chicken eggs because they can't find chicken eggs sometimes except at Costco and Fairbanks. And they're, you know, and I sell my, you know, I'll just give mine away as friend, to be friendly, you know. And so, you know, I mean, that just goes to show you that we're in strange times right now. And things are real expensive, like fuel and heating costs and, you know, inflation. So what I really like about this bill is that it will save everybody money, you know, and it creates an honest environment. And it's just, I think it's good for everybody. So anything that helps the people, I'm happy. So please vote yes on SB 9. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Samish. Do we have anybody else left to testify in public testimony under SB 9? No, we do not. Okay, we will close public testimony on SB 9. And we will, I guess, do you have any final comments to make before we set Senate Bill 9 aside?
I will make it very, very brief, and thank you for going over, because I know you like to end at 5. But I did want to mention, because I failed to earlier, if you remember back in 2013, I think it was Representative Chenault, the Speaker at the time, we had something that was performance audits. And our legislative auditor has been doing those. Those are ending July 1st. And then think about what became of that. Did we really use that the way we could have? And this is how it is different. So because we actually would have those, what would be produced would come before us and we have a decision to make. And so I urge you to think about this. I think that looking at where we are as a state, that if we can have this independent objective, apolitical entity, it would help the governor constructing his or her budget and based on the recommendations, and then the legislature, on the other hand, having the benefit of all that information to help us in our decision making as far as how to target the money and also how to have efficient, effective operations and adjust statutes to allow that. So I'm again, thank you very much, and I hope that the committee will consider this along with Senator Kaufman's bill.
Great. Thank you, Senator Hughes. Any other questions for the sponsor of the bill? Okay, at this time, we will set Senate Bill 9 aside. That will conclude our meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee today. I did want to set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 28, Workplace Restraining Orders, and Senate Bill 46, Brain Injury Awareness Month, which we heard earlier today, for Tuesday, March 21st at close of business. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, the 21st of March, and Tuesday, the 21st of March at 3:30 p.m. in this room, and the agenda is to be announced. So with that, the meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee is adjourned at 5:15.